Hi guys, welcome to Made In, a podcast hosted by Asian women to tell stories of our culture and beyond. Made In is a safe living room space where we talk about our upbringing, the dilemmas in our lives, and highlight the beautiful work of POC people that keep us inspired. Thank you for joining us. Hi guys, how's it going?
Hello.
We're back.
Hi guys.
It's just a solo, well, not a solo episode, but it's just the two of us again after a lot of great interviews this year. Super psyched about it. What did you think about it, Jazz?
I was very happy because, to be honest, like all the people that we got to interview have been kind of my top want to list. So I'm happy that we're able to sway them to talk to us. And yeah, I hope that people were able to kind of, you know, get some nuggets out of it and also kind of grow your community of Asian people that you can look up to. So that was kind of like my hope. But yeah, my Instagram stalking skills are getting better and better. So I'm really excited.
No, it's great. It's actually like, even though we were doing the interviews, I learned so much throughout all of it. I mean, one of the biggest ones is definitely the interview with Sarah.
Same.
I mean, you guys have to go listen. But anyways, just the way she talked about, you know, her spirituality, her family, how life doesn't, you know, you can't set up life basically. Like, it's cool because when we're talking, it's like, you know, like, yes, we're running the interview, but I actually am learning so much while we do it. And honestly, there's like no practice. We never go back on stuff. So thank you guys for bearing with us for all that kind of candid stuff, all the stuff that in between. And honestly, it's been a crazy year with interviews, but we hope that we can bring more in the new year.
Yeah, I hope that we are going to keep up the momentum. And let us know if you guys know anyone that would like to interview us, that you want to introduce us to. We're totally open.
Do it.
It's the same way. Like, I think we get so lucky because we don't have to do, like, any editing, or maybe our editor Josh will have something else to say. But, you know, like, it's kind of like the first run and we never have to, like, redo the interview. So I'm really lucky to have someone like you also, Evie, who can kind of bounce off, like, our, like, interviewing, because, like, none of us have, like, done it in this matter before. So before we get too mushy and gushy about it, but yeah, I've been really happy with all the interviews.
No, I'm so happy.
Excited for what's to come next.
Yeah, and I feel like this year, I mean, me and you were definitely able, well, we weren't able to see each other, so we've been doing this over Zoom. We upgraded our mic game, so, like, hopefully you guys don't get annoyed by our audio.
You hear all of my annoying laughs very clearly.
We love it. But yeah, no, obviously, we all know it's been a crazy year, so we just want to talk more about what we've done more personally, you know? So we know it's been a rough year for a lot of people. It's obviously something that we're all trying to live through. We're still trying to live through. But, you know, personally for me, and definitely going to ask you after Jazz, but for me, it was like a growth year like none other. Obviously, when you're not used to your environment, you always have to change stuff up. Things change a lot. You know, I learned how to live with my partner and my cat in like a small box condo, which is fine. It's all good, whatever. But
you and, you know, everyone else in Toronto.
For sure. Like, not super lucky to even be in a home, but like, honestly, it's just balancing, you know, your own time, which is something I learned. You know, I go for huge walks all day because sometimes you just need your alone time. If you're always home, it's a little bit much. You know, Wayne, my partner, loves to play Call of Duty, so you can always hear him screaming in the background.
With the speaker yelling at everyone else, and then now he got my boyfriend into it, and now they have this, like, crew where they play game together. I'm lucky because I meant to say I'm lucky I don't live with him, but that's not what I meant. I'm lucky that I don't have to hear him play all the time, so I don't even know how you handle it, because I think I would not like that and enjoy that.
Oh, we finally found, like, a really good balance. So, yeah. So, personally, in that way, found my own space in my house. Find my own work routine because I work in the same place that I eat and everything. I have one table for all of that. So, there's just, like, things I do. Like, right after work, I'll light an incense. Just, like, my own thing. And I get these, like, Japanese incense from a Parkdale store called Studio Brillantine. Just one of my favorite ones. And that's how I, like, kind of signify, okay, my day's over. And it kind of puts me in that space that's like, okay, please stop working. I needed that. Like, I 100% needed that. And I don't know. How about for you, Jazz? Like, what was a personal, it could be growth or like a loss, like anything that really stuck out to you about yourself, I guess.
Yeah, I've been a very errand-oriented person. I'll explain. As in, like, my perfect day is squeezing as much errands as I possibly can and doing it all in one day, like nothing gives me more satisfaction. So to kind of shift into a place where, you know, I can't just run into a store and then, you know, time myself perfectly so I can get on the next streetcar to go to another spot. Like, not having that control, having to let go of that has been kind of difficult. But, you know, I take my small wins where I can. And I didn't realize, and I love routine. Like, I'm such a creature of habit. I loved listening to, like, my daily podcast on my commute to work. And then I've given myself time to kind of do the things that I love to do when I'm by myself commuting or, like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, during the course of everything, someone made a suggestion, like, they do a fake commute. So, like, before they start work, they walk around the block and get back to work. And then when they're done, they physically leave their workstation and then go for a walk and come back. So it's like you're kind of coming back from work. So I don't do that, but before I start my day, I do like at least a 30-minute workout in my room, and then I have time to actually listen to my podcast and like do whatever I need to do. So like finding my usual routine that I used to do in a way that's going to work for my lifestyle now has been really helpful to kind of still keep myself accountable to, you know, making the sense of the day has been kind of like what I've been doing.
No, I mean, that's good. I mean, knowing you, Jazz, I feel like you are very obviously a creature of habit and routine. And the whole errand thing, I think me and you are both like that. You know, we just want to do everything we possibly can and squeeze it out all in one day.
100%.
But definitely is exhausting, you know. And so like these things that are unplanned for, they really are things that I think we both are super trying to, I mean, getting more resilient at, right? Like, oh, you missed this. You're not gonna be able to pick this up today. It's just not gonna happen. You just have to accept that. So I think these are the type of things that, like, it's actually helped me a lot. And this was the first year, like I said, even before COVID started, I was like, okay, I'm gonna do therapy this year. I've talked about it before.
You really did therapy this year.
Oh, I did so much. And that was a big part of my growth. And shout out to my therapist, Phoebe Chin. I've asked her for permission.
Are you allowed to say that?
Yeah, she says she's down. It's fine.
Love that.
And she's awesome. She's really awesome. So she's someone who definitely has helped me and a lot. You know, she, like I said before in my other podcast, she understands, you know, queer women of color, also Asian women. So very big connection between us and what has made me grow a lot too. So that is something I learned, like, definitely need to ask for help. You know, as an Asian woman, often I find, like, I grew up never wanting to ask for help, but this year, more so than ever, I've definitely reached out to everyone. And, you know, even my whole soup saga, which we can get into later, once you tell me about your personal wins. yeah, like, it's been something that I hate doing. I always wanted to be independent. I didn't need anybody kind of thing, but this year, people have surprised me, like, in many ways, made a lot of online, I know it's virtual, but, like, actual tangible, real kind of connections. And I think giving more people patience instead of assuming that they don't know anything. Like, that's, I have a really bad habit of doing that. Like, they'll never understand me, don't want to share so much. So this year, because we're home, because we're talking all the time virtually, and because everyone's kind of feeling vulnerable and things are getting kind of real, I think that's when you could find good connections online or become friends with people or closer with people. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, I think even through all of our episodes, like, it's so we like had our first episode ever go out, like, I think 2018, and then we took a very leisurely time putting out any new episodes for that year. And then I think this year we really were able to ramp it up. And like, even looking back at our like most listened to episodes starting in like middle of the year, I think the type of conversation we've been able to have with our listeners and our community members that are, you know, either helping, advocating with us or also engaging in different conversations. Like, I don't know if it's because like there was more time for us to invest in this type of content, or, you know, there are more people being aware of like what's happening. But I think the type of conversation we're able to have were so fruitful and like engaging in a level that I've never got to experience before. So even the type of like Instagram friends that I've been able to make just through our podcast alone, and even, or even if I'm like posting something random on my story that I'm passionate about, someone I wouldn't have expected would reply back to me, and then we can kind of spark a conversation, and then that kind of led to like checking in on them and like consciously making an effort to get to know them and then also like hear what they have to say. I thought was really like beautiful that kind of came out of during this time, because like everyone has to engage virtually, and that barrier has kind of been broken down. So yeah, I think having some go-to friends, I guess, now that on my Instagram that I can just DM when I saw something that I know they would like, I think has been something really nice to gain from this year.
For sure. And you touched on a big point that I was going to bring up, like my reflections of other people and myself and everything this year. Like we both said, like things got so real this year. Like, you know, you could try your best to, you know, escape it, which, you know, some people need, you know, you need your space. You always need to give yourself like, you know, goodness and good things and like not always stare at like horror all the time. But things got really like real this year where I think people are not so shy or self-conscious about sharing how they really feel. Like, I think that's a really good win because I don't know if it's like this in other cities, I'm sure, but Toronto has this whole annoying, I'm gonna say annoying AF thing about like showing that you don't care is like the coolest thing you can do. Like putting up an obscure Instagram story, like, I don't know, like of pavement or like a tree or like, yeah, that's cool. I love art too. Like that stuff is awesome. But like, you know, my pet peeve, and you know this, Jazz, like anyone I talk to, you, every stranger, I'm like 0 to 100. Like, you know, it has to get into
there
like some
no
really
zero. You come full throttle 100.
Oh, full throttle. And if you don't meet me there, like, I'm like, oh bro, I don't know if that's
you,
a
like,
real
one.
You
like weed out the weak ones.
Exactly. But I've been better this year because, like I said, more patient and trying not to be so prideful about that. But I think this year has been good for that. Like, it showed the people that continue to think like, oh, it's cool not to care or cool not to post. And I don't care if it's through a post. I don't care if it's like, if you don't go on Instagram and you don't want to do it, fine. Like, that's on your own thing. But I saw more people being more socially conscious. Like, I think that's a big thing that the Black Lives Matter movement, I say movement because it's been happening forever, but like this year was like a pivotal time where it was like, it's in your face and it needs to be in your face. And so that helped trigger a lot of other people to really be like, it's not uncool to share how you feel. Like, we're not in high school anymore. We don't have to pretend like, oh, we're too cool to care. Like, not caring is really, really uncool. Like, first of all, like, I think we need to dispel that myth. And like you're saying, Jazz, like, you're sharing, you know, stuff that you saw, like, even like in our wellness episode, the Indigenous Collective Health, right? Those are the type of things that are coming out on Instagram. You know, you see like people who can put graphics together, take like data, take like stats of, you know, injustices, inequities, and then put them in a visual language in a different way. So then, like, you know, it's something that we can share now. And I applaud people for like coming out of there and just out of that weird stigma that like, oh, you have nothing important to say, let's just say no, or like, let's not show that we care, or like, oh, does this make me look sus because I like share too much? Like, no, I don't think that's a thing anymore. Like, caring is amazing, obviously, but like the whole thing about like being too cool to care or even be a part of the conversation, like, that's not cool. It's done. Yeah. Like, we're not doing that anymore.
I know. And like, as you said that, I had this like flashback of, you know, did you ever watch 22 Jump Street? You know, when they go back to high school and then like, oh no, maybe it's 21 Jump Street. There's like this, no, 21 Jump Street. When he's like,
but Channing Tatum is not cool.
Exactly. And then he's like, no, bro, this is how you act cool. Like, wear one strap backpacks and like, don't care about anything. And they're like, no, you don't care about the environment. Like, I thought that was really funny. But you're right. And also, like, Hollywood has made this like the cool chill girl vibe to be like a thing. And like, you know, when you're like a girl, if a guy like walks all over you, you gotta be like super chill about it. And like, I've been such a victim of that too, but like, that's not cool anymore. Like, I think there's like this meme going around, be like, show me that you're doing work on yourself by like sending me receipts to your therapist. Like, you know, that's the vibe we're on right now. Like, you need to do self-work. Like, just trying to be the cool girl, not caring about what the other guy's doing, like, that's not cute look anymore.
No, I mean, there's nothing like a pandemic to make everyone's priorities straight. Like, if your
life... Nothing like a pandemic, you're right.
Yeah, if your life is not about helping other people's lives or caring or even just learning about a little bit, I have no idea, no idea what you're doing. And I'm not even going to say no offense to that because obviously this year has been insane for a lot of people. So I think caring is something that we need to get used to. And like you said, that 21 Jump Street thing, that's really true for like Gen Z. Like, they're way
ahead
of us.
Gen Z are scary, man. Yeah. Wow. I can't
like,
even get into that.
Like, they care. They care. They're inclusive. Like, you know, this year I've been actually really privileged to teach like guest lecture, like two Ryerson classes about,
oh my God,
audience.
Really? Evie, audience. Professor Evie.
No. It's mostly about, like, you know, why diversity is super important in media or whatever. But they care so much. Like, they, when you go to the question time and everyone at, like, in our era or age or whatever, like, everyone's quiet. Like, hey, does anyone have questions? And everyone's like no one wants to say anything to act like they care.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But, like, all these kids had so many questions for me. They're like, how do you, you know, report police? Like, how do you make sure you listen to all sides of the story? I'm like, yeah, you guys are going to be the future. And I hope you guys save us, because, to be honest, like, us millennials, we got stuff to figure out. And like I said, this year really blatantly shows me that, like, Gen Z has been above and beyond the curve of caring. You know, they don't care to care. Like, it's like cool to care. It's cool to do, you know, protests. It's cool to say how you feel and, you know, be part of the dialogue, which is something I think that we are still catching up on. So great on Gen Z, and hope everyone else, especially the hype people in Toronto, please do not think it's not cool to care. Please care. There's no problem with that. And, like, there's so many resources now too. So definitely we can send some and share some too. But I just think that's a thing I just had to address. I don't know why. It's such a Toronto thing to me. I don't know if it's like a New York, LA or anything thing, but
yeah. I can't believe you also call it Gen Z. Isn't it Gen Z? I guess Z and Z, but
okay, Z is the Canadian pronunciation of Z, but I respect that because, you know, we have audiences from both sides and all North America, so I'm down. That's fine.
Fine. But okay, I will say I totally agree with everything you just said, but there is something about Gen Z that I am quite terrified of, because I'm subscribed to this newsletter by the Vox, and then they talk about, like, the TikTok culture, and I think it's safe to say, like, TikTok culture and Gen Z is, like, very married together. And yes, I think it's amazing that they're advocating and they care and they're, like, speaking up and, like, doing something about it actually, whereas, like, you maybe in our generation it was kind of like, oh, like, we'll let other people do it, or they were trying to act cool. But I think there is this misconception about, because there's, like, these Instagram influencers that you can make money, there's no value in, like, actual education or actually having grit to work on something. Like, gone are the days of unpaid internships, but those were the most valuable experiences that I've ever had. And I'm sorry if I sound like a fucking boomer right now, like, preaching to the choir, but I do think there's all these, like, oh, instant gratification and, like, instant money making that can be done through all these social media platforms that I'm scared that they're just gonna never gonna go to post-secondary school. They're never gonna actually feel like they're gonna learn anything from something superior, and they're gonna immediately be like a CEO and, like, lead something. And I am quite scared that, like, Gen Z is gonna have that arrogant mindset without having to kind of understand the nature of how you kind of progress to get to that level. That makes sense.
For sure, for sure. I mean, that I definitely agree with. And one point, like, one big caveat, yes, they're doing the right things in terms of action, but I think lots of, like, even for me, you know, education and research before, you know, you go into jumping into a big point, making a post about something, that is really important too. So that is something, like you said, you know, no
leverage. Check yourself.
Yeah, it takes work to get to the places. And, you know, me and you been through the grind. We did retail. We know the grind.
Yeah.
And those kind of experiences for sure that build your character. So, like, I'm very excited to see at least there's a bunch of young people with initiative and they want action. And we should learn this too. It's just like we should all, and I'm learning every day. I'll make mistakes every day. And that's just like, I'll definitely read 10 things before coming up with, like, an idea about it. Personally, that's just someone who, like, that's who I am, because I hate sounding stupid or missing any part of it. But that's something I think that, like, again, we got a lot of resources this year from different perspectives, thankfully, like, you know, different backgrounds, all types of things that we can learn from a lot of different people. So utilize that, like, utilize the internet and listen to people. And I think that's something that I have learned is, like, the value of finding, like, that everyone has, like, an interesting story, like, you know, like, you have to just find that kind of nugget and learn from it, because everyone's willing to share and everyone has a different life experience. But again, like you said about Gen Z, we just got to make sure that we are educated about it, or, you know, have enough data or whatever evidence to make a conclusion about it, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone hated on millennials too, and look at us now. So I don't want to give Gen Z too much of a bad rap, but I am interested. I want to continue to empower them and, like, you know, see how they go. But maybe there's, like, a bitter part of me that, like, those motherfuckers, like, I had to grind through, you know, like, unpaid internships and shit. And now they, no, not that everything is handed to them. Of course not. But, yeah, I do want to give them the benefit of the doubt because everyone generation before us said the same thing about millennials, you know?
For sure. Like, we definitely got the, these guys are so entitled avocado toast thing. So I really hope that, no, I don't hope to get anything like that annoying, but whatever. It's, you know, it's a generational thing. So hopefully people who are younger listening to this, like, we actually would love to have someone younger on the show. That'd be really cool. So if anyone can suggest to us, that'd be kind of a cool perspective to bring in there.
Yeah. From all the, I guess, like, episodes that we've done this year, I feel like one of the most biggest one that we've been able to kind of continue our engagement with our community that I didn't expect was our whiteness and wellness episode, obviously. For those of you who hasn't listened, rude, you should go listen to it. But basically, Evie and I, we've been talking about bone broth, I think, in every single episode. Just anything we talked about was able to be tied back into how bone broth has been mass produced in the white wellness market. And as soon as the episode came out, obviously, we were talking about there was this pop-up that was happening on Ossington Strip that was owned by a white owner selling bone broth at a really high markup across the street from Golden Turtle, which is like a really legendary like place in Toronto. And then since Evie being a journalist also got to like have her say in it on Twitter, and that literally blew the fuck up. And I personally obviously was with you throughout kind of the journey, but like, how was that with you? Was that the first time you kind of had like a quote unquote viral content go out? And like, what was that for you on behind the scenes? Like, cause personally, like, even when I tweet, I'm not a tweeter, but but you know, every time I make a statement about something, is actually so terrifying. Cause like you could have said one wrong thing that you didn't fact check, and that can come after you on that. Like, what was kind of like a process for you to actually decide to, you know what, like, I can't sit on this any longer. I have to finally say it. And then like, how was the days after that? It kind of came public.
Y'all ready for the soup saga? I'll definitely tell you. So from the start, the reason why this all trickled down, and it actually irked me for a week. I didn't even look at the page.
We like talked about it, but we didn't like dig into it.
We talked about it. You're like, there's a place called Brothel. And I was like, what? And I just looked at it on my phone. It wasn't called Brothel because it's obviously called something else. But I didn't even see it. So I was like, whatever. And you had told me for a week. And then other people had actually reached out to me and told me. And then some other people also said that their friends of theirs actually DM'd them because the sign said Brothel. And then some of the content was obviously over-sexualized Asian, Jamaican, I don't even know what kind of food. And so it wasn't until one day, like, I was sitting here and I went on the, like, went to their Instagram and just like looked at it. And like, I could not, it's not that I was like, I did not enjoy looking at it, but I was like, I can't believe this. Like, when I was looking at this, I was like, this is so 2015, like, not even like, right. Like, where it's like, oh, this place in LA, like, thinks they're the new vibe. And 2015, I'm not saying that's okay. It's never been okay. But like, people were still not really aware of that stuff back like 5 years ago. That's all I'm saying. You know, for the first one, like, obviously the names of the sauces, like jerk meat for jerk sauce, like, obviously went through tons of different evolutions and stuff, and people trying to retain the actual, you know, their own like their own recipes and stuff. And now we're gonna call it jerk meat and sell it, and it's like green
at
like
Brothel.
And all those things, right? And we're talking about Brothel, like a, like, where, you know, Asian and Black women and, you know, from all like diaspora are like one of the biggest victims of sex trade. It's a little bit gross, right? Like, we can't even look away from it. So I had seen, like, a lot of people had told me about it. A lot of people said they messaged them, they didn't get anything back, they didn't hear back for like a week. And so that's when I decided to, like, put it on blast. I think in retrospect, I might have reached out first. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, I don't really have too many regrets about it. Even though I got, like, and we'll talk about that more. Like, even though it got so viral and even, like, violent in a ways. Like, I don't feel regret about it because that is me holding people in the city accountable, right? Like, that is something that I do as, like, my role. That's someone I want to be in the city. Like, whether it's Doug Ford, whether it's, you know, like the owner of like a business, whether it's this person like who owns this broth place, like it doesn't matter to me. I hold people accountable in the city. If people have reached out, been telling me I'm reaching out, like why not use my platform to help a community or communities that don't feel heard or like that don't face the same equity? And then, you know, obviously that tweet blew up. At first it was like a lot of people being like, oh my God, damn, this is so gross, blah, blah, blah. You know, like kind of like understanding all those kind of things. Of course, like nothing physical against or like actually harmful towards the owner is what I wanted. I'm pointing out commentary of what you are producing, how you are making money, what names you're using. And I'm like, to be honest, I was sickened by it.
You didn't make shit up. Yeah, you took screenshots directly from their feed and then was just adding your own commentary and adding your education to it.
And I was sickened about it. And like, it's like, and I even brought in my own background of being like, you know, like, we all grew up kind of throwing out our stuff because it was so embarrassing. So it's really hard to see someone rebrand something as the expert and then, you know, put on all these words like no MSG, no preserved, like I would say almost no herbal soup. I don't think any herbal soup in my own culture has MSG in it. We don't say it, but like that's something you already assume because, you know, from the century, from even the New York Times in the 70s wrote about how Chinese restaurants had MSG and it made dirty people sick. Yeah, and it made, but there's no proof behind it anyways.
Exactly.
So that whole saga led to, you know, people kind of reaching out. And the thing, another thing that people don't understand is that just as much as I think they were uneducated about it, I do not think that the store did their proper research before. You know, I don't have the authority or power. I'm not anyone in power to shut down a place. I'm just simply saying things I see. As in, like, I walk around the city.
You didn't have a vendetta to be like, I must bring down the small business owner during a pandemic. Like, that was not your fucking motive.
No, and I honestly, I had known also that, like, you know, that's a pop-up. And not that, like, my end result when I was making a commentary on it, I didn't even know what the end result was. Like, no. I just made commentary on it. I didn't even suggest one side of it close. I didn't say anything like that. But the thing is, like, to allow this business to continue, you know, taking the names of foods and stuff that's part of many people's cultures and kind of like just whitewashing it to make it palatable to the white experience. Like, come on, this is centuries
We've
of that.
Like,
we're
not this. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, that happened. The tweet blew up. It actually even blew up to like George Bush's former advisor. Like, it was that.
Oh,
fucked.
Shit.
Like, it was. Yeah, it was insane. Like,
were they a troll? Was he a troll about it? Or
he wasn't. I mean, sure. Like, he might have been a troll, but basically he was saying how pho is something that can be used as a word for, like, I guess a white. It's not appropriation because it was Vietnamese people who made the word pho because of they were inspired by French people. But like the thing is, like, we
sounds
don't understand
like a
that,
lot of fucking excuse to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's called colonization. Like, no one asked French people to go there. And, you know, like, whatever you decide your language or whatever appropriation, like, there's clearly a different class struggle. When the funniest comments I think I got from that whole troll blow up was like, oh, are you gonna go eat hot dogs? Are you gonna eat spaghetti now? Or is that appropriation? I'm like, this is clearly not what I'm talking about, but I don't feel like I, even if I engaged once, which I didn't, like, I will not engage. I had to actually mute things. And the thing is, even before this, I thought it was stronger to be able to handle all this kind of stuff. But after like day three, I was getting like death threats, like people saying they're like, that's not people, fucked. Like random people being like, you chink, like lots of derogatory racial stuff, like chink, all the fucking Chinese derogatory stuff you can think of. And then stuff like, I hope you get raped to death, those kind of things, right?
That's
over
so
this
fucked.
Kind of tweet. So fucked. But, you know, me, Jazz, and I see myself as someone who's like pretty strong and like can You're handle it. Strong. But even at that time, I needed to be like, oh, I gotta mute stuff. I gotta like go offline. And like, I even had to like call the police because it was like part of the procedure to ensure that if someone had tried to like know my address, I like went private on my Instagram, deleted a lot of stuff off like that would show where I live kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it felt honestly horrible. It was the first time, and I don't mean this in a weird way, but I've never felt so understanding the gender disparities of being like, I cannot stop this, you know, like not that I can't stop this, but the things they're saying to me are not just like murder. They're like rape and murder and like sex and murder and like violent sex crimes kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, they don't even care, like, you know, what comes out of my mouth, of course. Like, they don't, they just see that I'm like a woman, and like, that's the easiest, fastest way to literally like kill me, like in their mm-hmm. eyes, to say something so evil. So yeah, that was like, it was like a week of like logging off, kind of waiting for it to die down. You know, to this day, I still get stuff, but I don't see it in the same light as I used to. And mm-hmm. people ask me now for a lot of commentary. They share a lot of stuff with me in terms of food and appropriation. And I'm going to keep speaking up about it. Like, I don't feel threatened or sad about it. Like, I don't care, and I don't have regrets about it. It's just more so, I hope that, you know, they'd ever use those names again. Like I said, if you had made chicken soup, celery, carrots, that's basically what was in your soup anyways, like, I would not have cared. I'd just be like, oh, that's an awful name, I hopefully change the name. But like, who am I to say you can't mm-hmm. make chicken soup? You can also make like your Asian inspired soup, but like, don't take the name and claim yeah. it and then get it all wrong and then, like, you know, basically just bastardize the entire thing. That's the thing that I was just like, I hope you have done your research of where this comes from, because we and Asian people and Black people and people of color have done so much, and not even research, but like persuaded to be whitewashed every day of our lives when we were young, right? Like mm-hmm. we had to be like Hollywood. It's still like, you know, a white system and white society. So like, we wanted to be like that. We learned so much of how to be like that. You know, language and the way we act and the way we dress is all kind of dictated by, you know, white systems and white people. Like, it's not inevitable. So it's like, we already know those kind of backgrounds. Like, but when you go and do that, and we're obviously a marginalized group compared to, like, you know, the white groups, like, it's just something I like, hope you learn about it. Like, hope you yeah. really put your work into it. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, I have no regrets about it, but like, it's just, it sucked because, you know, we all received hate on all of our ends, really, but I didn't gain anything from it. Like, I don't gain anything. The best part though was people like, she just wants listeners on our podcast. I'm like, you know, this
yeah,
comes
I
out
do.
Of, yeah, I'm sure I do. It comes out of me and Jasmine's pockets. Like, we're not sponsored. Yeah.
I wish we were sponsored.
It was just funny that was like in it. Like, oh, I'm like, yeah, you can listen. It's free for you and me.
Yeah, well, first of all, that's an insane story. And I think, you know, everyone's aware of like cancel culture and like what happens when a viral content gets put on social media. But I think we forget the receiving end of it. And I'm sure, you know, educated people can empathize with the other side, no matter like if it's a celebrity or someone local to you that is getting like blasted on social media. But to those ones that are not even seeing you as a human and just see you as like an object of like a Chinese woman that they can just throw all these like derogatory terms to, as much as easy might be for you to be like, oh, you know, the words doesn't affect me. It's like easier said than done to pretend that those people doesn't exist. And like, you know, obviously that doesn't carry any weight. But when you're getting bombarded with those messages, like, you still have to check yourself. And I think when like God of Cookery put on his social media about the whole brothel and like Rhyme Nutrition, I think the first advice that he gave me was like, do not go into the comment section, because you will never win, and it's like a fucking death hole. And I 100% agree with that, and I wish I never went into the comments, because of course I went in there in solidarity to want to promote like, you know, support what I also believed in as well. But just seeing, not only was it like seeing the people that were pro this Rhyme Nutrition and like saying things, was it really irking me? But there were also like Asian people supporting that, and I was just getting so mad. And then I also went a layer deeper and will look at who liked the comments that were like pro against what we're talking about, and like some people that I know that were like influential in Toronto and also were like, you know, notable friends that a friend of a friend's in the community. So like, I know fucking who you are, and like, you're making a public statement to be against what your friends might be like advocating for. So like, I just got so dark and like twisted into it. I personally had to take a step back, and I can't even imagine what would have been for you who were like directly on the other side of it. So, but I think all in all, I'm so happy to hear that like, you still have no regrets, and it was like a lot of different things that must have been going through your mind. But I think, you know, I would like to think that, like, when we both started this podcast, like, we had no fear about, like, whatever we wanted to say. Like, we don't want to be censored and whatsoever. And these are the type of conversations we have all the time. And the fact that we were able to put it out, and there's so many outpouring of, like, positive and in support of that we were able to get out of it, I think was definitely worth it, hopefully, for you to be able to speak your mind too.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, the comment section, I definitely avoided it. I was like, I looked at it for a second.
It was rough out there.
I
mean,
one thing I just got to say before this is, like, yeah, you might be Asian or half Asian, but wanting to be white or being under system is something, it's a hell of a drug. And if you keep taking it and that's your friends and that's your circle, you probably won't be able to see it very well. But that's also something you hope that everyone can unlearn, you know, like it's a weird system, but yeah, it's something you just can't, engage in. You can't put your life in it, because again, it was online, right? It's like we're typing on a stupid screen. Like, yeah, I mean, this year for sure we use social media and stuff like that way more, again, to advocate for things like that. But I do think there is a big space for hate and, you know, misinformation as well, obviously. So as much as you can, please learn to log off. And I'm like saying this not being that good at it myself, but really gonna try our best to do that. Jazz shared an article with me about, like, having that special group chat. Like, you talk about it, Jazz. I want to just jump in because you were so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so I read this article by Donnie Kwok. He wrote it in, like, 2017 for The Ringer. But basically, he talks about how the safest place on the internet is your group chat, but a very specific group chat. So he starts off talking about how he was on his way to his friend's house to watch, like, Sunday football. And he was in, like, sweatpants and, like, had a plastic bag full of, like, a six-pack and, like, food or whatever. So he's in this elevator, and there's another, like, white guy in the elevator as well. As, like, Donnie's ready to get off, the white guy kind of pops up, like, oh, I'll hold the door for you. And then Donnie's like, oh, I'm not going back down. And then it turns out, like, as he was thinking about it, this guy in the elevator mistook him for an Uber Eats delivery person. So as he, like, continues to go in to his friend's house, like, whatever, he doesn't, like, bring it up because it was his group of friends were all, like, none of them are Asian. So he didn't feel like it was, like, a space that he can, you know, relate this situation that just happened to, like, talk through it. And then he talks about, like, it was this microaggression had at least been polite. And so I thought that was really funny. So then, like, as he, like, wraps up that night, he's, like, walking home, he hits up his friends in his group chat, but it's all, like, Korean Americans that he is in this group chat. And, like, he felt safe to kind of talk about it there. And then, you know, yeah, just kind of goes and talk about, like, your closest friends that you can talk about without any filter does tend to be within the same race. And something I actually want to, like, talk about with you as I get into this article is, like, when is it, like, not gatekeeping, but when is it when you just feel naturally inclined? Like, for example, you talked about earlier how when you meet someone for the first time, you go to 0 to 100. And I still remember the very first conversation you and I had. It was during lunch break outside of Aritzia for 30 freaking minutes after working 9-hour shifts. But we were eating lunch, and, like, it was, like, first time I think you and I ever had a conversation. And I remember walking away from that conversation. I had already told you every single, like, worries that I have about my mom and, like, dating and, like, church communities. Like, we just, like, went off. And it was, like, first time talking to you. And I was able to do that because there's, like, I saw you as an Asian girl. I knew we could just have this vibe, and then we're able to just, like, chat through. And I think in the article, he talks about how when we're in a community with other white people, you're kind of, like, positioned to respond in certain, like, racial situations in a very respectful way of, like, telling them what they want to hear. So you make everyone feel comfortable walking away from that conversation. But when it becomes, like, you and me talking about the same topic, you know, we can get raw. You know, we can say shit that's, like, kind of maybe uncomfortable, or, like, we have a common understanding because we both maybe have similar situations that maybe me and my white friends haven't had before. So kind of boiling all down to that, like, I feel like what I was able to see when you were going through this whole soup saga was, like, the outpouring of love from our Asian community that we've been able to build through our just time in Toronto, as well as just growing for Maiden as well. And I think that's so important. And there's this other podcast that I listen to called $6.99 per pound. It's also with two Korean Americans. And he also talks about the group chat he's in. And then one of the girl talks about how she was so jealous about not having like a group chat of like Korean friends that she can talk to. And I kind of grew up similar because even though I grew up in a Korean church community, my mom was very careful of like what image I would show if I was talking to many guys. Mm. Or, you know, since I was forever living this like double life, even if there was like a Korean girl that I wanted to like talk to, tell everything to, I had to have an element of a filter because I didn't want her knowing everything to go tell her mom and then her mom getting back to me. So like this whole like Korean gossip also really scared me to be fully myself. So that kind of didn't allow me to have a lot of Korean friends growing up. And then now fast forward, I'm like in my sadly late 20s, but you know, now I'm being able to kind of get all these kind of like similar Korean friends. And it was all through like literally Instagram. Like I have random Korean girls that I was able to find on Instagram that I like vibe with and will like DM each other sometimes because they will like follow me back. And I think that's so important. And I ran on a total tangent and a rant. No. But how do you feel about having like that same group chat that you can reach out to talk about like Asian inequalities that are happening or any other Asian related topics? Like, do you feel like you have something like that? And do you think that's true that you need that?
Oh, 100% I need that. Like, that's like you were saying, like when I grew up, I tried to avoid that at all costs. So, you know, the church group, definitely not my homies, like still to this day, very bitter by it. Like, I feel like it was really a judgmental place. Like, I didn't want to say anything, obviously. And then growing up in high school, like the whole goal was like to be less, like not goal, but like the fit in is like you have to be less Asian, right? Like, so it wasn't until later on and, you know, founding my family, like my chosen family, like my people is like so important to me. Like this year, like, you know, just meeting people like Luann, like basically was one of the biggest.
Shout out, Ruru.
Yeah, one of the biggest people who were able to talk to me, you know, not just about like, not saying things like, oh, just I'm on your side or whatever, but like, you know, talking to me about like what, you know, what's going down and in you too. Right. So like, but those are the people that I was not close with her at all before. Like, but to me, like it's very special. I feel like blessed that that happened. Right. I feel like that, you know, Clarence is like God of Cookery is someone I talk to a lot. We're both Canto too. We can get along. Like the best part about all this is like, especially, and this is just with my Canto friends, like if I need something very specific, like I'm talking about like a plaza at York Region that we all grew up eating at, I actually found my crew like that this year. It's actually insane.
Oh my God.
It's so wild. Like there's a dude named Jerome, he works with the Raptors and he's Canto, and my coworker Adrian Chung, and we're both Canto. We're just literally talking about this specific place in First Marketplace. If anyone knows what I'm talking about, it's like on York Region, blah blah. We're talking about growing up there, thinking how the food was so whack, like it was so weird. Like, and that's like, those are the type of things that are just fun that I'm like, if you know, you know. Like that's like immediate connection. I don't need to explain to you how dingy the mall was or explain, oh, it was so weird because of this XYZ. Like they were there. So they were like, yeah, it's so weird. Like we know. Also with the bad things too, right? Like if we're talking about another Canto friend is like really overworked at work and like they talk to me about like when do I give myself a break? I always want to prove myself. I always want to be that good, like best worker, blah, 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 whatever. Like those are things that I feel like we bond over, right? Like knowing that we are ingrained to be like these insane workers, like try to do your best, try to do that, but like being able to complain about it at the same time too, you know, like having that safe space where you don't have to explain, like just because I'm Asian or just because they think I will like work longer, blah, blah, blah. Like you don't have to say that to me. I know exactly where you're coming from without you even having to say the words, right? So
yeah,
those are the type of things that I heavily, heavily treasured that I have made those kind of connections with. And even more widely, like, yeah, I'm talking about the Canto group, like, which is a very specific thing, like when I'm talking about specific things, but you know, a lot of my Asian friends, even other friends of different like people of color, can get along with them really well because I feel like we have different experiences for sure. But when we talk about those kind of frustrations, we get that there's, you know, inequity. We get that there's stuff that we feel like microaggressions or anything like that. It's not something weird. If I was at a restaurant and I felt like the waiter was, you know, they're not saying racist things to me, but they're not really looking at me or like caring about me or whatever. Or like, and then the table next to you is white. And then they were just like, blah, 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 blah. They have like 3-hour conversations. That's a microaggression. And if I say that to friends of color or whatever, they'll be like, yeah, I know that feeling, right? Like you don't have to explain that. So those kind of group things like really, you know, you need it. You need to blow steam off without having to overwork and overexplain yourself. I think that's so important.
Exactly. I think just like not having that filter of having to justify or back up your claims or like previous experiences to paint like a picture of a situation to, you know, someone maybe that's not Asian, it does take a bit more like energy mm-hmm. to have to do that. And yeah, and I love like you have your Kanto group that you feel ways with. I have like random groups of like Korean people that I can just reply back to in their stories. Like, and also like, I love being able to like drop in Korean words because, you know, there are certain words that doesn't have a direct translation to English that just doesn't carry the same tone and the message that I'm trying to convey. So like being able to have that and like laugh through that, I think it's like so important. And as I'm getting older, like I long for that. One of my favorite words in Korean is chung, like J-U-N-G. And there's no direct translation, but it basically means like a kind of like an instant liking to or like an instant longing and like loving for the other person. And like in Korea, it's so notable that like, you know, and I've experienced this so many times myself and I can't really explain it. But like one time, like me and Jen actually went to New York and Jen had two Korean friends that lived in New York or something like that. And then we all got to hang out and I've never met these girls before, but I'm the onni, which is like an endearing way of calling like an older sister. And there's like this level of respect you have for like an onni or like an oppa, which is for like a male version of that, that they do. And these girls were like my dongsaengs, which younger? Is like the younger sister. And they were so cute to me. And like when I was leaving, they'd be like, oh, like, hope you get home safely, onni. Like it's things like that are just like traditional in the Korean culture that I don't get from like any white friends that I have, you know? And like I really long for that. And I think it's because it's just kind of fundamentally in me. Like since I did grow up in Korea, I grew up watching that and also, you know, watching K-dramas. One of my favorite things that happened this year was Luann actually included me into her and her two friends group chat talking about K-dramas.
Amazing.
So Susan is also in it as well. Shout out to the K-pals. that's our group chat name. But yeah, just being able to just like talk freely about K-dramas without having to explain like, you know, my news, like things that happen. It's just like so freeing. And I think I needed that. I needed that outlet so much more than I thought that I
would.
For
sure.
Especially in it being more notable.
For sure. And like, we were talking about that too, but we're not treating this, like this podcast is that, right? Like it's an expanded version of that. But mm-hmm. if you do DM us, like often we answer and often, you know, it's just one-on-one combos that are just like, yo, like, you know, if they're like, people have sent me stuff. They're like, oh, this happened to me at work, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't have to explain often when it's from like an Asian woman or, you know, basically it's like something that I immediately kind of understand, you know, we work through it together, but this is what like we want this thing to be and continue to be is like, again, like totally just like a living room space. Like you just talk to us because we mm-hmm. ourselves didn't grow up having that, you know, not someone to look up to, but someone that is talking in a public space kind of like this, that looks like us, that's Asian, that went through some of the similar experiences that we do. So those are the kind of things that like we hope to provide. And like, you know, it's a safe space for you to just share your stuff. So that's been a big thing that we've actually gotten, you know, a lot of messages this year have been so heartwarming and so inspiring, and also really helped me a lot with a lot of different things, you know, just also me, it kind of shows that me and Jazz are doing are, it's not that we need the affirmation, but it's like, you know,
I love words of affirmation though. So please don't stop. It's my
language. No, okay. Well, Jazz, you're inspiring as fuck. No, but I mean like, yeah, it's been good to know that at least what we're doing, we're hitting these topics that aren't talked about so much. Mm-hmm. There's a lot there, you know, as much as the backlash as we sometimes get, it's totally worth it. And we know we're talking about something of cause if there's so much reaction to it, right? Like,
true.
Yes, we're not trying to make bold claims. We're just trying to bring people on to share the perspective, people that will look like other people that aren't in the mainstream right now. Like, mm-hmm. it's so disappointing to me that, like, I mean, I'll just bring this up quickly, but our last episode, which was great, like our interview with G-Sub, like about mm-hmm. how Asian men aren't ideally attractive.
Yes.
Like on Twitter, we have posted it to our Twitter page and so many people are like, oh yeah, Asian men aren't attractive. Well, here's three photos of BTS and that guy from Pretty Rich Asian or whatever, who's half mm-hmm. Asian. And be like, you don't think they're hot? I'm like, but you know that we only have like 10 perhaps Asian male Hollywood actors, right? Like you're exactly. literally showing us 10 people. Like what is wrong? Like, that's not the point. The point is like this whole grouping of people doesn't feel like you know, they have the love, they have the voice to share like what the frustrations are. So that's what we just always wanted to do. But obviously it's just like, those kind of things are just funny, you know, like we just to this day don't have that much Asian representation in Hollywood, you know, on the big screen still. But it was just funny to like see how that sometimes is the reaction. But mostly what we get is like, you know, people really wanting to engage more and also, you know, hopefully recommending us to talk to other people. And I think in the new year, we're going to have like some pretty exciting guests, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Having this has been really a treasure for me. And like, I feel very blessed to have this and to talk to you all the time, Jazz, and also like have our listeners talk back to us in different ways. It's really awesome.
Yeah. I think the reason why I like it so much is because I think these topics, not that it's like taboo, but because I personally, I had to hide away so many of these topics to talk about it with my mom, where like I didn't have any Korean friends that I could actually just like freely talk about it with. So I'm really enjoying to be able to be really candid about it. But I feel like the more we talk about it, the less we make it weird to talk about it. You know, like the more we are hiding it away, the more we are pretending it doesn't exist or we need to like overcome it or whatever. I think it's making it harder for us. So the more that we're normalizing being able to talk about these things that are hopefully helping. And to kind of your point about our last episode interview with Jisab, one thing that I did want to point out that I didn't get to was that as much as we can identify the toxic Asian masculinity, and we talked about how in TikTok it's being fetishized for Asian men, I think something that's really important that we didn't get to address is that as Asian women, we also need to stand up for our Asian men as well. I'll be the first to admit that when I was younger, I've said I don't want to date Asian guys. And there's this really good episode of Invisibilia podcast that I listened to where they talk about interracial dating, and then this guy talks about how he heard his little sister, who's Korean, say that, oh, I would never date an Asian guy. And for the brother to hear that, if my own little sister doesn't find an Asian man desirable, like how do I have the confidence to want to date other people? So I think it is really important for Asian women to like also advocate and turn down those like Asian men fetishization that's coming kind of to a rise now. That is just my last little tidbit that I wanted to add about that episode.
For sure. And for us also, you know, the whole thing is unlearning. We should stop the normalization of over-sexualizing us. It, mm-hmm. You know, it's the whole system that works both ways, basically, that makes it bad for us and divides us. Exactly. So exactly why we wanted to put, you know, G-Sub on, and we're going to try our best to have more people on too, hear from their perspectives as much as we can. And yeah, I thank you guys so much for this year and really supporting us. And hopefully
it was such a good year, guys.
It was such a good
year. Like more than I could have ever imagined.
It was a great year despite the shit, but like it was a great year for the Maiden and great year for us connecting and really talking to all you guys. So thank you so much for everything.
What's next year? Like the Chinese Lunar New Year, the ox?
The ox, baby.
What does that mean? Do you know?
Well, I don't really know, but I know the ox in the traditional story is like really resilient, but he got played by the rats because the rat jumped on the ox's back and was like, oh, we'll just cross this river together. Because obviously the rat can't swim in the water. Mm-hmm. And the rat ran straight through the finish line. And the ox was like, what? That's why I came in second. So this is the second.
Oh, yeah, I like that you were saying it was resilient, because like, I feel like if 2020 has told us anything, it's like we need to be resilient. And then resilient. Fucking rats? These rats are going to ruin us in 2021?
I know. And the ox is also super obviously loyal and resilient. So, okay. I mean, we'll see what that means. I love Lunar New Year horoscopes. They're so specific.
What are you?
I'm a rooster. But have you actually read one? Like, I'll share a link that you guys should read. It's hilarious. Like,
I think you sent me one last year and it was funny.
Yeah, it's not whimsical at all. It's not like the Capricorn zodiac, whatever. It's like totally like if you avoid sharp objects, you're gonna bleed. Like, it's so specific, and like if it's bad, it's bad. It's gonna tell you. And mine last year,
has it come true?
Mine last year was pretty bad. It was weird. It was like you should get into like new professions, like plastic surgery, but again, avoid sharp objects because you're gonna bleed everywhere. So like that confusion, yeah, pretty much was real for me this whole year, like confused as all hell. But no, I wouldn't say it comes true, but it's just like I love how literal it is. It's really funny. And I'll definitely share it with you guys. But 2021, we're going to it, we're getting to it, and Let's get it. Let's get it.
Let's get it. Let's get it. And let's end it at that. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you guys next year in 2021.
See you next year.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Made In. This episode was edited by the audio master, Josh Pardo. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at iMadeIn. We would love to hear from you and keep the conversation going.